Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Have you been seriously injured? Mama Justice is here for you. Our medical team partners with top-notch doctors, surgeons, therapists, and urologists, ensuring a comprehensive recovery journey. If you've been injured, call Mama Justice today. We're here for you.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Hello, friends and neighbors. Welcome into the Garden Mama Show. My name's Nellie Neal. I'm known as the Garden Mama around here, and it is my great pleasure and a tremendous privilege to be here with you today. Good morning, Lance. I hope all is well. Are you thawed out yet, sir?
No, the whole week. I think it's been feel like it's a little bit of an ice box out there, but it's okay. I've enjoyed it. It'll go away.
I have on very thick trousers today, but I do not have on the three layers that I've been wearing all week.
Yeah,
so it's getting a little better in my part of the world. I don't know about everybody else, but oh, New Orleans.
Oh, it was beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. We had such a...
It was so beautiful. Unfortunately,
piñatas.
They, as of yesterday morning when everybody went to work, they still had not opened the interstate or the twin span or any of that stuff. And it was pretty chaotic from what it looked like. But
well, we're not used to it, especially that far
south. They are way not. I'm a Louisiana girl. I've seen snow, but they never had a blizzard warning.
Yeah, palm trees, sand, and snow. Those are things that you just don't see every year in Mississippi or Louisiana.
Not all the time.
Snow on the bayou. I bet it was nice down there back in the woods.
Some beautiful videos have come out from folks that were willing to get out and at least send the GoPro and the bateau, you know. I'm not sure how many people there were, but
I think the prettiest pictures I've ever taken of landscape have been Mount Nebo in Arkansas. It was you've seen some of those on my camera, and they're not embellished. They were on top of a mountain. It was a cloudy day, and the sun was cracking, coming up, and it just. And then we're in the Delta on one of the bayous when it froze. A few years ago, and everything looked like a Norman Rockwell painting. I mean, I could take a picture, and it was like I didn't do that. God did
this
that.
This is a really good camera.
I'd look at it and I'd take another one, and it's
delightful.
The extremes, right?
We've had some sky shots like that here lately that folks have been sending to me, and of course, I always appreciate hearing from people. MamaOnAir@yahoo.com. It amuses me, and sometimes they end up on the show here at supertalk.tv, but it really does tickle me what you see, because everybody's got, well, I shouldn't say everybody. Most people now have a camera in their pocket that's better than the first five cameras I owned in my life, and I do this for a living. So I really do appreciate the quality that we're able to get and the beauty and joy that we're able to see. I'm not really sure what to ask. Is it your favorite? Do you prefer it fried or do you prefer it grilled? It's fish taco day. So what do you like? What's the one that gets it going for you? And if you think it's a terrible idea, please let me persuade you that it is not a terrible idea. It's a brilliant form of food.
The best, or when you get them down at the beach or something, in those areas where that's a Mexican restaurant, that's their specialty. They got some fresh catch off the beach. But I do like a catfish fried taco. I mean, there's something about just a fried catfish, maybe a little comeback dressing. And then, as your kind of condiment, and then, and roll it up. A little lettuce, maybe.
I'm South Texas and further west, so I'm fried fish and a whole lot of some kind of slaw that's way too spicy.
Yeah, the slaw.
Just delightful stuff.
Whatever the slaw mix. Julienne slaw.
Very seriously, I'm not going to do anything that fine. So you're right. I don't do as good a one at my house. But I have to tell y'all, because we all have friends that are trying to be less carbolicious than we ever were before. This is not me. But they will attempt to serve you what is actually a lettuce wrap and call it a taco. Don't fall for it.
I like making
lettuce wraps are great.
Yeah,
but they're not tacos. Yeah, they're not fish tacos. It's a different thing.
I think the taco, in my opinion, again, is it has to have some form of corn or flour tortilla fried. Or steamed or over a little heat. And
preferably turned over a few
times. Turned over a couple times. Mm-hmm. I like they have the crunchy, the crispy, and then the soft. So I think you have to wrap it in that for it to actually be a taco. But I could be wrong.
Well, there's arguments about that. Yep. There are many arguments. And in fact, there's arguments about
everything.
Irish whiskey. Today is Irish Coffee Day.
It is.
And the question is what to put in it. Now, you just had some pictures up on the TV of something that I'm sure you did not recognize.
It is
known as Burns Night. January 25th is the birthday of the poet Robert Burns, the Scots national poet. Okay, for those of you who think this is really boring, he wrote Auld Lang Syne, and you're still singing it. So trust me, you have Robert Burns an influence in your life. Okay. Now, what do you eat on Burns Day? It's a dinner. They celebrate it all over the place, much in the same way that we will honor occasions and people and use them as fun events for the family or use them as fundraisers for the community or any number of things like that. In this case, it is a really fancy version, and I say that with all love in my heart, of absolutely crazy mashed potatoes. It's called champotades and neeps, which are mashed turnips. You notice they didn't get in parsnips or rutabagas, so I'm likely to eat this on one occasion once every few years. But I'm still not as those are. I'm still a turnip girl from way back when. But sometimes they put the carrots in, but that's not necessarily traditional. I think that's when they're trying to get children to eat more vegetables. But it includes, of course, haggis.
I was going to say, I noticed that.
And that's that thing in the picture if you're looking at it. But it also includes, as you will also see in the picture, whiskey.
Yeah, nice two-finger pour, too. They were being generous there.
Well,
that's not
a
bar
you gotta
that poured
eat the
that.
Haggis.
There was not a local bar, yeah.
No, haggis, probably
that's
not.
That's the one I was like, I know what that is. I know what the one in the back. I couldn't tell if that was grits or taters.
It's taters.
And I was like, there's no way in England.
It's taters and turnips over there in Scotland.
In Scotland area, the UK. I was like, I don't think they have grits over there. So.
There's the question, of course, is to define haggis, and haggis is pretty tough. But it is.
Got to have a little intestine wrapping
it. There are people who would compare it to the slug burger in that it is whatever you had, but it has been elevated to the point in many ways that like the slug burger has, so that now we actually know what is in the haggis that is made today. Mm-hmm. And that is lamb, beef, oats, onions, and spices. A lot of all of that.
And packed into the intestine.
And packed into that thing.
Yeah, into that intestine bag.
Yeah. Woo, my goodness. But if you like mince pie, apparently you will like haggis. I don't. But if you do, that's in your flavor profile. But it's really good for you for iron and fiber. And yes, of course, it lots of carbohydrate. There's all that turnip and carrot and potato.
And one thing I've never understood, is it smoked inside of that? Is that how they cook? Is it cooked that way?
Yeah, it's mixed up and then cooked.
And it's smoked or heated or baked or whatever they do.
I think it's traditionally smoked, but they probably bake them
nowadays, right. Yeah. Because they were trying to keep this for a month or two. You know, you kind of wanted to hang it, dehydrate it, then smoke it probably.
They did it and then waited for Burns Night to eat it.
Right. Prepped this for 2 months. The haggis can't go bad, folks. We've got Burns Night coming.
Gracious, we've got to take care of that.
We've got to drink our whiskeys.
I drink all that whiskey.
That
so this is the question, of course, is always, why do they do this? Well, they do this because, quite frankly, for those of you who are not big readers, people used to sit around and read poetry to each other, and they were pretty intrigued by Robert Burns' writing. So it eventually becomes a thing. And because he is so celebrated over all the centuries, I mean, he's born in like 1750, okay? So his work has been around for a while, a minute. As a result of that, it has great, and it becomes a thing with panache, you know? If you are a contestant on Chopped and they serve you, they give you to cook with haggis in a can, you may not be so happy. But the real thing, apparently, is a meat-rich, much like a mincemeat pie, it's not sour, it's not, you know, any of those, it's tends towards being rich and kind of sweet. So that's what I'm told.
I'm going to trust you on that.
I haven't been to Scotland yet.
I would love to visit. And when you go to Rome, you do as the Romans do. You absorb the culture, the history, the language. And you have to, if you go to Scotland, you've got to eat haggis. And if you're in Italy, you've got to eat pasta.
I think that's very true. You wouldn't want to miss that.
There's certain things you would have to partake.
You absolutely would not want to miss that if you had that opportunity, for goodness sakes. A couple of other words, though, floating around today that somehow seem to have my attention today. The new pandas have come out. They're not new, but they're newly released to be shown to the public, tumbling over in the snow and whatnot.
Like cubs
in Washington.
Like little panda cubs, okay.
Mm-hmm. And they've been Bao Li and King Bao, and that's because they're pandas. They all have that sort of lyric quality to their names. But the best part is that, much like the cameras that where you can watch bald eagles nesting, there's panda cam. So if like me, you're probably not going to go to Washington to see them, it's kind of fun to watch them as they are being introduced to the public. And watching people's reactions is kind of fun too, because people who've never seen a panda are always impressed because they're so pretty.
That's where I think technology nails it.
Mm-hmm. I can observe without disturbing them.
Well, and it doesn't cost you much. It doesn't disturb them. It's convenient. I think we nail it with certain things like that, and that's really cool. The cams, where you can sit there and get the live animals. They don't know you're there, and that's part of the joy of watching an animal, is when they really don't know you're watching.
And it's kind of like people watching.
Yeah, it is. But animals are so much more fun. I mean, I was sent an Instagram of the cats scaring dogs, and it was like a 1 minute clip, and it was hilarious because they were house cats and house dogs living in the same house, and the cat would walk up to the dog and just stare at it, and one would just fall over like it had a heart attack and play dead.
It was absolute comedy,
and you know, you could hear the owners laughing about to the point of hysteria.
Well, and that's why you video those things.
Exactly.
You know?
And then having that and being able to share that.
There's a video of my kitten absolutely being taunted by the tail of one of the other cats, and the other cat obviously is playing with her, you know, giving her something to jump onto, but when she goes a little too far, there's a little noise there. Just a little noise. Just a little bit of noise. Ken says he's not sure what's going on with this POTUS. It's been... Now it doesn't look so great.
Yeah. Having a little tough time. The light.
I think it's in low light, and I think it's dry, and I think it needs fertilizer. So move it closer to the window and put a little fertilizer in the pot and give it some water, and let's see if we can't get it to at least come back a little bit in color. And if it still doesn't, then we'll cut it back a little bit and cut those one or two strands off and root them separately. That would be my thought. Christmas cactus cuttings, yep. Interestingly enough, people are rooting Christmas cactus in great numbers this year, and Ken's one of them. It's fun to me to watch all of that take place. I'm going to try and find, and I will try and bring for next week, there's a method that someone has shown us that where we basically are sticking them through plastic wrap into perlite, and I don't know how to tell you how much to do or how deep or any of that. I don't know if you have to callus the leaves before you do this, but I'm going to try and figure it out. If any of you have done that, please let us know. Say good morning to our friend Paula. She's in here today. That's wonderful. I
wonder if she's cutting some dogs today.
Oh, what you doing, Paula?
Yeah, you working?
She might be working.
Probably maybe on the ride in.
Probably is. That's a good question. What are you doing today? What are y'all doing today?
What is everybody up to? It's cold. I know that.
I'm just going to tell y'all, it's the end of January, and I have not pruned the fig, and I have not trimmed back the ornamental grasses.
You were warning folks last week.
I was sick, and then I was cold, and then I was sick again, and then I was cold. So I'm just not doing any of it, but I'm going to. It's got to warm up this week so I can get some of these things done. That will be really wonderful. Today we are going to have a guest in the next hour. We're going to talk about the Gulf Coast Orchid Society show, which is coming up next week, where, of course, I wish I could run away to.
Beautiful place to
beautiful, beautiful
break.
Flowers. Y'all get to see some gorgeous pictures when we get that rolling in the next hour. And today is Seed Swap Day. So for those of you who collect seeds, who are interested in all that, go to exchange.seedsavers.org for some information there. And, of course, southernexposure.com has some really good notes about how to do a seed swap if you're interested in doing that. We have a couple of master gardener groups in our state that do a brilliant job of seed saving and seed collecting. That's really how you get those plants that are the ones you aren't going to know until, well, there they are. You know, you didn't realize what that variety was until you saw it, and then you couldn't find it. Well, when you found it, it turned out you could get a seed for it from your neighbors as opposed to someplace else. Garden Mom, is my fiddle leaf fig not getting enough sun? It actually looks pretty good compared to some I've seen this winter. Till about 10, and then it's just indirect light. It loves it outdoors in the summer, but of course has to come in for the winter time. I think you're just seeing, Greg, a little bit of the difference between being outside with more sun and moving indoors. I think it's a natural thing to expect this to happen. I would fertilize it, and if you can, get it into just a little bit, maybe till noon, get that higher amount of sun after it greens up again. I think it's just gotten a little pale from being indoors and unhappy. So try that, okay? Beautiful pictures today at supertalk.tv. One of my favorite plants, which I do not grow, is cyclamen, and there's some gorgeous pots of it. It is a brilliant gift plant. It is a plant that is hard to keep going, in my experience, because I tend to overwater things. If you don't, that could be a pretty good one. Yep, Paula's headed in to do some pup grooming today. That's good. They're lucky.
Yeah, she's really good at it. Lucky. So, pets. The pets are smart to have her if they get to choose. You know, you got to run to Paula, babe.
Exactly. Yeah. Ray is putting us on a notice from Long Beach. It's 31 this morning.
Yeah, buddy, tell me. It was 27 when I left. I didn't really think it was going to be that cold when I walked out, but it was.
It was. Yeah. It absolutely was. I have been trying to figure out when to say something to y'all. This has been a real hard week for us around here, of course. We have had to say goodbye to our dear friend Paul Gallo. And I do have a few things I want to say, and I will get to that this morning. I didn't want y'all to think that I have forgotten about it. But I met Paul when he tasked me to sit in for whoever couldn't get here. And, well, that was the first station of the Super Talk Network. It was the end of 1999, and this is the longest I've done anything except have children. So I think he saw a little something in me. But by that following summer, I was made a part-time permanent employee, and he took the time to congratulate me. He didn't need to do that. He's the big dog, okay? He didn't have to do that. I will always remember that generosity. I've been here ever since, so I think probably he saw something in me. I knew right away I would learn something from Paul Gallo. He's a few years older than me and wildly different in experience, but he like nobody else lit up when this red light came on. And, you know, of course we shared that. I came to identify with that even today, and I'm happy to be here with you. I'm happy to celebrate him. Guess what? We'll be right back.
Take me back to another morning. Town so long ago, where the sweet magnolia blossoms, cotton fields were white as snow, Catfish John was a river hobo, lived and died by the river's bend.
How can propane gas enhance your outdoor experience this season? When it comes to outdoor grilling, there is no better source than propane. But have you thought about a beautiful outdoor fireplace and lighting fueled by propane as well? The perfect setting. Worry-free grilling with propane. A golden propane fire to sit by. And soothing propane lights burning in the background. Impress yourself, friends, and family with propane. Propane. Clean American energy. Visit mspropane.com to learn more.
Hey there, homeowners! Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
Ugh.
we've started something around here, folks. Every day this week, somebody's asked me something about potatoes, and the questions just keep on coming. So let me talk about potatoes for a moment. Excuse me. The question about potatoes is always, why do some people plant them in the fall? Why do some people plant them in the spring? For example, the question on our text line today says, I bought red potato seeds, the directions noted to harvest in late summer. Well, that doesn't make any sense because I've been telling you can harvest them in May. That's not what he said, but what she said, but it's that reference. That's true. Potatoes take about 100 days. There are one or two varieties that take less. In most places, you don't get 100 days of good weather until you're in the late spring, moving through summer, and you harvest in late summer. Actually, we're planting again in late summer here for the fall potato crop. So what I'm here to tell you is, yes, we plant them in February. It still takes 100 days, which is about Mother's Day when you'll be harvesting. I did have a few other things I wanted to say about them. You need to understand that the potatoes you plant in the springtime usually do bloom. And some of those flowers will actually look like little tomatoes. And that's because these things are related to one another. It's actually not something to eat, okay? So the sprouted eye of the potato like that is not something to eat either. But you may want to know what that is. A lot of people are curious about it. Some varieties, you hear me talk all the time about Red Lasota. I love that potato better than anything. It's the one it's a new potato. It'll be about the size of a golf ball or a little bit bigger. And there are other ones. There's Red Gold. Those are great. It's a little bit shorter time to mature than Red Lasota. But we've also got Kennebec, which is probably the classic white potato that we grow, the classic russet. It also is a little bit shorter time. It's about 95 days instead of about a week sooner than the Red Lasotas. But it's something to think about, and it's something that you really do want to enjoy when you plant them because, quite frankly, they're going to be better than anything you buy, and that's no offense to Idaho or anybody else that grows potatoes. But when you grow them yourself and you're harvesting and eating them fresh, it's a much better experience. So remember, February is the time to plant potatoes in our part of the world. Please do it and give yourself, you can grow them in straw, you can grow them in the ground if you've got soil you can dig through. But you've got to have about 2 feet of stem underneath the top of the plant. So that's why we usually put them into a wire basket or something else, even a straw bale, to let them grow that way. It'll do better for you out of the heavy soil that we tend to have. And it'll also, frankly, give you a fun project to talk about when your neighbors come over. Let's all grow some potatoes. I know that we're talking about sweet potatoes eventually. Not today. These are what are called Irish potatoes, okay? That sounds funny. But that's exactly what we're talking about, is potatoes. That was a really good question. Thank you for asking that, because I didn't think about the fact that if you get your potatoes from somewhere else, they're going to tell you something different. Or if you get them in a package from a big box store, it's going to have instructions that are really intended for Ohio. So you don't have to do that. I have a bunch of things to say about perennials today. A bunch of things that I would like to talk with you about. And of course, like, you know, anytime you have someone on your mind, you have a lot you want to say about them. One of the big reasons why we do Fish Taco Day and, you know, things that like that is because Paul Gallo showed us how to do all of that. He probably, you know, I'm not going to tell you that he celebrated every holiday. I don't know that. But he's the first person that ever told me when it was Blues Guitar Day. You know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, boy.
I would never have looked up.
You man, know? He was so funny about that in the mornings, too.
Great
when
stuff.
There were some good ones, it was always, you would dig in. And when those were the ones where there was like 8 different things on that day and they were all terrible, you know.
He would lighten it right up.
Yeah.
That's absolutely
but
true.
That was a big piece, honestly, in something that, you know, when we first started working together, was he loved the birthdays and the this day in history, but the this day. And it really is, he would always say, you know, we don't want to give people a heart attack on the way to work. We got to keep it light because we're going to light it up here in a little bit.
Let's talk fish
so
tacos.
He had really a great perspective on that, you know, and yes, how you get into everything. And same with an interview. He was really good at, you know, starting out a certain way, then kind of poking the bear a little and then coming back down.
That is really the hallmark of someone who can do what he did, and that is to talk to anybody about everything. And that's
and you couldn't prepare for an interview with him as much as I would have 30 or 40 screens up, you know, every day.
There's always
he got
else.
To the point where he appreciated that. But at the beginning, he wanted me to print everything. And I was, I can't print everything because.
Yeah, you've taken me from old school to new school, too. I don't print anymore. But, I still have some paper, but it's paper that was printed a long time ago. It's not brand new printing. I use the laptop and it's made it. It's made for a better show, I think.
It is nice to be able to celebrate the many different wonderful things in the world today. There's so many unique things, and I'm happy that some of them are a big whiff when they label a day. But a lot of them are really cool and give you a perspective that you don't get.
When else do I get to tell you about Robert Burns' birthday, for heaven's sake?
Yeah. Right, exactly. Thank goodness for the internet, or we'd have to have some encyclopedia of awesomeness.
I wouldn't remember all of that.
I wouldn't.
Well, there used to be calendars of all that stuff, and they were printed, but the type was like, you know, teeny weeny. You better read it the day before.
You had to have the magnifying
glass. Be able to see what it was. So we do a lot better now. We do absolutely do a lot better. I'm happy to tell you that. I do think that in those first meetings, Paul was kind to me when he didn't have to be, and I think he saw something in me, but I think he saw something in himself, too. And in most people who succeed in broadcasting, we're all richer because he got to know himself. He, like that famous son of the Delta, B.B. King, Paul knew there was something else out there. That's a famous quote from B.B. King. I sat on that tractor and knew there was something else. And that's when he got a guitar and went off and took the next step in his life. Paul Gallo was someone who grew up farming. His family farmed. And when his father passed, of course, those things all changed. Things happened. And he knew that there was another way for him. So you know what that guy from the Delta did? He got up and went to Chicago and went to broadcast school. You know how much cojones that takes? My goodness, that's a brave thing. Now, I'm not going to compare myself to that. I did go away from home. It was important to do that. I do think that if you go out of your home state for a little while, it's real good for you, especially if you come back to do great things. Paul Gallo did that. Paul demonstrated more than anything else on a daily basis outrageous old school work ethic. You hear people talk about they can't get anybody to come to work. Paul knew about that. Got to show up. Do your best, exercise your passion for this medium every single day. He did that. He did that. He was as passionate about his work as he was about his hummingbirds. But guess you didn't know he had hummingbirds. Well, he did. Not one, not 10, but scores flying around his many feeders. I so enjoyed his expansive tales about their antics and the broad smile that it gave him to tell those stories. Just delightful, wonderful, wonderful hobby. I give him credit for keeping my home state sugar industry so healthy. He bought sugar in 20-pound bags. Okay, that's a lot of hummingbirds. We will all miss the gusto of that big voice, and we send our heartfelt condolences to his family. As we say in my tradition, may his memory be for a blessing. And that is exactly the sum of it. We are, when the time comes, we are all the result of what we have done, and we are all the result of who we knew and who we touched. And by any of those measures, he was a tremendous success. Rest in peace. Back to the text line now, because, you know, he would say, all right, that's enough of that. Move on. Get busy. I know you're not supposed to replant tomatoes in the same soil, but I use 15 of those 29 to 30 gallon containers. It gets expensive replacing the potting soil. Is there something else I can use as filler? Well, what I have learned over time is that the answer is no. And you don't know which ones are going to be affected. You don't know which ones are, because some tomatoes are going to do this worse than others. So I have to suggest that if you want to try something different, replace only half of it and see how that goes. There are not that many hard, fast rules, but the second year in the same soil, tomatoes attract more root knot nematodes than the plant can generally bear. And that's the problem. They're always there. Those root knot nematodes, you know, it's kind of like sooty mold. You know, they're always out here. You may not want to know that, but they are. So give yourself the opportunity, maybe switch to half of it. Really, all it takes, of course, is some soil from your garden and some leaf mold and some of your own compost and maybe a couple of bags of stuff. But it can get expensive when you're filling that many pots. I know that's true. I'm trying again to grow parrot lilies, astromerias. Oh, that's pretty. Tried ordering tubers. Oh, none of them came up. I'm surprised at that. But not. I mean, sometimes there's a bad shipment. But anyway, a friend dug up some, and only one survived until the squirrel knocked over the pot. Oh, no. All right, these four plants arrived a week ago. What should I do to get them to thrive out in the back garden in the ground? I would need to know specifically what the name of this astromeria is and whether or not it is rated for your zone as an outdoor plant. But I can tell you that if it is, you're still going to need a place with at least half a day of sun and some really good drainage in the soil. I hate that you've had so much. I would keep at least one of these in a container and grow it that way just in case it doesn't work in the ground. That is one of my perennial rules, you know, and I truly don't have that many. But one of my perennial rules is if you shop out of town or if you order an extra one so you can keep it in a container, or you can put it on the other side of the yard from where you think it'll grow well. That'll give you a little bit more opportunity for success. But I wish I could figure out why those others didn't work. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I do know where you have to. I'm not going to plant them out until March, but I would keep them in some kind of a tent and keep them moist but not overly wet until that time. Can I grow carrot seeds in February and how many days to harvest? Depends on the variety, how many days to harvest. But yes, particularly if you are able to provide a little cover for them in case of another freezing spell. We could all take book on that. I don't know if we're going to know whether it's going to do that or not, but you certainly can, and it's a good idea to start all of those early spring winter crops as soon as you possibly can, February at the very latest, early March, because depending on the variety, carrots are going to take maybe 60, 80 days. Some take a little bit longer, but you're probably not going to be growing those. They're usually about 70-day crop. I love that. Carrots. Let's do more carrots. Oh, thank you. That's nice. People are saying such nice things. That's sweet. Really, really sweet. Okay. We're going to worry about that problem at the break. We got lots of stuff going on today. There are some beautiful greenhouse photos in the mix today at supertalk.tv. There also are some absolutely beautiful orchids. That's because we are going to talk, as I mentioned, in the next hour about a whole lot more about orchids and about the show in Goche. If y'all haven't done one of those, plant societies used to be an almost routine part of our world, but they're not so much anymore. So that's why it's such a particularly special event to be able to go and see what they're up to. These are specialists, these are breeders, these are people that just love that particular plant, in this case orchids, and it really does make a big difference in how things happen. There are a couple of things that we need to worry about this particular month, and we're running out of time. One, of course, is to prune the fruit trees. One is to prune the ornamentals, ornamental grasses, I mean. But let's see now. What else have we not done? Well, we haven't really talked enough about one of the basic winter projects. That, of course, is caring for the shrubs outside. And I wanted to tell you about using dormant oil sprays versus ultra refined sprays. Dormant oil sprays are, generally speaking, for fruit trees. They have a very specific purpose and are very hard to use in some cases because they're very thick and have to be sprayed with a different kind of sprayer oftentimes. So when you go to the shelf in the grocery store or go to the shelf in the big box store or go to the garden center, make sure that you are looking at the particular one that is ultra refined. It may be called all seasons oil in some cases. So, why do we spray plants with oil in the winter? Well, one reason we spray them is because we need to suppress their insects. And there's a lot to be said for that, which we're going to talk more about today. There's so many reasons, though, and so many bugs and so many plants. So let's talk about oil when we come back right after this.
down south. I went to school against my will way down south. I kissed girls and I shot squirrels out behind my house. I learned a lot about this world way down south.
Harvested in June and July, Mississippi-grown sweet corn arrives just in time for your cookout or outdoor get-together. But you better be quick. Once Mississippi-grown sweet corn appears on your local farmers market shelves, it disappears just as fast. There are so many ways to cook and eat Mississippi-grown sweet corn, but of course our favorite is corn on the cob.
Sweet corn, just one of the many foods the Mississippi farmer grows for you, the farm families of Mississippi.
You know that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. Do you have an old, outdated website or just a Facebook page and still not bringing in customers? Targeted digital advertising from SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital's highly trained and trusted staff is the answer. We're ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get started today.
We've sent that rib.
Yes, indeed. Yes, I love that the co-op has shelled sunflower seeds on sale. Yes, you can put them in your bird feeder. Great question, Kenneth from Starkville. Hey, Kenneth. I hope all is well and that everything's going well up there, but I know y'all were cold. Oh, my goodness. Whew. Enough of that. I'm ready.
Where was this? I was reading.
Starkville.
Oh, yeah. It's been, you know, all. It's so funny, though, that it was so much colder south.
Wet.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Wet, cold, had the snow, and Oxford in the northern hemisphere of the state really just kind of just said, hey, we're gonna sit this one out.
Yeah, we don't have enough moisture in the air, and it's actually too cold to snow.
So. I felt that way a few days this week. I don't even think the snow doesn't even want to come down.
Exactly.
Right now.
It's unfortunate, but it does happen that way sometimes. Another good question. I have a pear tree, and it's very tall. It really too tall to take care of fully. Is it too late to trim it? No, it's not at all. You can top it, you can trim it, you can do whatever you need to do to get to be able to work on it. I would not cut the central leader if that's the main thing that's there. But if you've got branches that can be cut back and you can even top it a little bit, you'll be able to have better access to it. So I think that's just fine. Just fine. I want to talk about perennials today. I am such a perennial fan, and there's a lot to say about them, quite frankly. I want you to be aware that everybody talks about how perennial plants are the answer because you have to plant annuals every year. Well, if you start on perennials, you are actually going to end up planting some every year. Everybody talks about doing this in the opposite season to which they were blooming, but in our case, we just kind of have to go with the weather and how things are doing. It can get very, very hot in the fall, so the spring perennials might not be well divided at that time. On the other hand, it's so cold right now, you probably don't want to be dividing the summer ones at this particular moment. But very soon, you'll be able to do that. Don't be surprised if, for example, the ones that you've just transplanted don't look so great, or if the ones that you proceed to transplant don't look all that terrific either at one time or another. Perennials are not that difficult to grow, but as a group, they do need to be in enough sun for that particular species and soil that their roots can grow in. I want to make sure that I tell you a couple of things that I have thought about over the years and really kind of put this together. I do believe that this is my insurance rules for perennials. Always buy two if you really like something, and particularly if you're shopping out of town or online. Don't plant them together if you're unsure about the location that you selected for them. If you're unsure, cut back half the flower stems and see if they rebloom before you deadhead. That's something to think about. Usually it's if the leaves are adapted and are smaller, then we can have a less success in that rebloom, but that's not always the case. Before you dig up the crown, see if you can take the offshoots off from around the plant when you get ready to multiply it. Some plants, like hosta, don't want to be messed with, and you are literally going to have to dig the whole thing up and gently separate them before you can replant anything. But some others, it's easy enough. Ajuga and things like that, it's really easy to dig up sidebar, so to speak, and take those and replant them. I always say let the willing cedars go to seed. There's Rudbeckia hirta is one of my very favorites that I've ever grown because of this. Its seeds come true, and frankly, once those seeds are mature, you can take them and just spread them all over the place, and you'll have little plants come up that will be yours to transplant or to let grow. You're going to have a beautiful garden when you grow perennials. So here's the final tip, my friends. You're going to have to strip search the people that come to visit you, or at least take away the knives and small bags that are in their pockets, because trust me, we all want our garden to be as pretty as yours. And we probably would like a little, one or two little pieces of that Linton rose would be a good thing. Grow some perennials. Why not? Who's on the phone?
We have Anna in Oxford.
Hey, Anna. You going to give us a weather report this morning?
Well, it's cold right now. It's predicted to be warmer.
Good, good, good. Say? Oh, I'm so glad.
Well, you know, we've been through two major freezes and two major droughts in the last 2 years. So this is the third one.
Y'all are trying to set some records. Yeah.
Well, you know, my garden is a mess, which, you know, from before, and I've had a couple of trees down, which have had to be taken up. But I wanted to... I think a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned that my camellias had great big buds on them, and what am I going to do to protect them? And you made a good suggestion, paper bags on them, and I did that. But then this last phase, I thought, yeah, the flowers are just, they're just itching to open up. Mm-hmm. And I cut off all of the blooms, along with a few little parts of the leaves and stem, and I stuck them in water, and it was very nice. And I have now got them to root.
Oh, fun. You didn't know you were going to have that much success, did you?
No, I didn't. And so I'm going to have a lot of little tiny... It'll take a while for them to get to be anything, but they are rooting, which is, you know, very good.
Yes,
and
yes.
So I'm hoping that the winter will not be as bad as it was a couple of years ago.
Mm. Well, we're going to cross our fingers for that. So many people have trouble rooting camellias that I love that yours are just taking off, you know, in the vase. It's really wonderful when they do that.
Just little knobs. You can see where it's coming out. And before the winter, I cut off a few twigs of the native hydrangea.
Yes,
the,
oak leaf.
You know which one I mean, oak leaf. Mm-hmm. And that actually rooted, and I actually did it kind of early, because normally you wouldn't do it until, what, spring?
Well, either way, like that's one of the things that's true of perennials, but it's also true of trying to root things. Sometimes the fall is better, sometimes it's not.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't worked yet for my... paper bush,
mm-hmm.
which I had to cover, and I have no idea if that has survived. And also the
I expect that it will,
Japanese,
by the way, because it's actually hardier than we think. But I think Japanese azalea is tougher, but the paper bush I think will be fine.
Yeah, well, the Japanese azalea, we thought we'd lost it last year, and it came out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've got sheets, just to protect the wind, because we get a lot of wind here.
I understand. And that really can, you know, we talk all the time about the actual effect, whether it's the wind chill or the heat chill or all that other stuff.
Yeah.
And in fact, sometimes the windbreak is what makes the difference.
Yeah, well, my husband and I have a little joke, and it's, you probably don't even remember this, but years ago, the Queen was at a horse racing event, and her eyes were watering, and her mother was still alive, and the mother chided her for crying. She says, "No, Mummy, it's the wind, Mummy." So every time we come in from outside and our eyes are watering, it's the wind, Mummy.
I like that. In my family, yeah, we say you're leaking.
Yeah, I do miss Gallo, because I would do my exercises in the morning to Gallo, and now I don't have Gallo to exercise to anymore. It's very annoying.
Well, the good news is that we're going to put that on the list of requirements for whomever takes the seat. So. Lance is making a note of this as we speak. So,
yeah,
those guys have been great. I'll tell you the truth. We've had some really wonderful times at this company since I have been here. And anytime somebody is ill, anytime somebody has to get out for a little while, there's always that next person ready, because that's what a good job they do here of teaching people. So I know that you will have an exercise buddy any day now. Thank you, Anna.
Well, we got to get out of here. And I can see where Gallo got his training, because I lived in Chicago, and that's a real radio talk town.
It's a very big town. You're exactly right. And this is one of his favorites right here. We'll be back.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
You know that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. But what if the online information about your business is incorrect? Or even worse, not very flattering? If your online presence isn't great, you may be losing customers. SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital's trusted and highly trained team is the answer. We're ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get started today.
Hey, this is Bob.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome in, friends and neighbors. I'm so glad y'all could be here today with me. You might be live, like, you know, Ray and Charlie and everybody here on the text line this morning. But you also might be listening to the rebroadcast on Sunday. You might be taking me along as a podcast. You might be watching a little piece of a video of me that you'll get a chance to see if you're a subscriber to All Things Garden Mama Weekly. There's just all sorts of ways to get more garden information, and that's what this is all about, making sure that you have what you need, that you know what you need to know, and that you, frankly, have the opportunity to talk to somebody about it. Gardening can be so isolating. Sometimes we go into our garden because we don't want to take the phone. We don't want to talk to anybody. We just want to go out there and pull some weeds and feel meditatively with nature. Other times we just want to go out there and kick some booty and make sure we get the job done. All of those things are worth talking about, and that's why I'm here. Thank you very much. I'm planting a half a dozen hybrid chestnut trees on my farm fairly soon. Donald says this is Donald in Oxford. We've talked about chestnuts before, I think. What are your do's and don'ts with chestnuts? Well, the joy is that we have chestnuts to plant, because as y'all know, we about lost them in the 20th century, and now that we have the opportunity. You're looking for a full sun sight, and I mean as many hours as you can get on your property, days and days and days. You want to have the opportunity to have some soil that does not hold water extensively. You don't want sand that the water races right through, but you don't want it to be what the case where the roots of the tree are going to sit in water for any length of time. That's not good. Those two pieces of information are really the most important. depending on what kind of shape the chestnut trees are in, you might, that first moment when you've planted it, you might do a little bit of pruning to establish the canopy. But if they're not, you know, if they're not that strong yet, if they're not that big, they might be only a foot tall, then you need to just put that on your agenda for subsequent winters. It's also true that chestnuts are just beautiful, and there's no reason not to appreciate them and enjoy them. Give them enough room, spread them out, make sure that you've got as much access to water as you're going to need for at least the first couple of years. That may be a tree bag, or it may be a water source, just depending on where you are. But the first couple of years of any tree, but particularly something that we're so excited about having as hybrid chestnuts, there's really got to be a water source available when it needs one, or the growth will slow down. If you can get that growth to be slow and steady over a couple of years, the tree's going to be fine. So I like it. I can't wait to see the pictures. Congratulations on getting that. That's a wonderful tree. Charlie and Brenda from Clarksdale. Hey, y'all. I have a very old Christmas cactus. When is the best time to repot? And what about fertilizer? Thank you very much. I appreciate you listening. That's a good question. I need to be doing that myself. I have two that need to be repotted last year. And I didn't, but they bloomed magnificently anyway. When an old Christmas cactus needs to be repotted, the first thing to understand is that it does not want to move up very much. They do like to have their roots constrained. And so if you're in a 6-inch pot now, don't go to a 10, you know, go to a 7 or a 7.5, something like that, because it makes a big difference in how the plant performs later. One of my horticulture teachers told me that the plant will just sit there and try and grow leaves, try and grow roots, and you'll be looking for leaves. And that's true. But it's also that it takes them a little time to get themselves adjusted. And if they have more root space than they need, yeah, they'll concentrate on that for a while. So you don't want that. The good news is that you've got a really good start, because early spring is the best time to do this transplanting before we want to put them outside for the summer. So I'm hoping, like I said, January has not been real productive for me, but I'm confident that I'm going to get them repotted before I put them out in March outside. And sometimes I don't even put them out until later than that in the year. It depends on if it's particularly warm one year and I've got a nice shady spot for them, I'll move them out. Otherwise, I keep them inside until summer. I love Christmas cactus, but I got to tell you, when they grow and get big, you do have to do something with them, and repotting at this time is important. Let's see. I'm going to do that at the break. Okay. I'm going to let you and Lance work on that one. And I'm going to say, what do we do with our houseplants in the winter? At this point in the winter, we're thinking about the repotting of some of these things, Christmas cactus and stuff that has outgrown its stuff. I've got some philodendrons that are now putting out air roots and sending roots out from the bottoms of their stems. I mean, it's just, there's way too much. Obviously, there's no more room in the pot for their roots, so I've got to move them into something else. But whether it's a peace lily that you've inherited, or whether it's something like a Diefenbachia, you know, that you walk into the garden shop and just have to have, this is the time of year to look at those plants and see how they're doing. If you've got a row full of them, I went in yesterday morning and realized that the watering that I was doing wasn't quite enough for the couple of plants in the far back end, because the light's real bright in there. I've got some grow lights in that room. And as a result, I wasn't watering enough. So I had to get that going. And I think I probably managed to do that. Talking about things that we're going to plant in the next month or so, I know that everybody's looking forward to pruning roses and getting more roses into the ground, and I think that's a great idea. The Antique Rose Emporium folks over in Texas, if you're on their email list, you know this already. They do a thing, I think, almost every Friday, maybe every Friday, where they feature some group of their roses and something that's particularly interesting about them. In this particular week, they're talking about pollinator-friendly roses. Now, what does that mean? Why would a rose be pollinator-friendly? It's not always. But if the flower itself is open, if it's a semi-double, if you can look in and see the yellow stamens, for example, that one's going to be more pollinator-friendly than one that has its flowers all doubled up and closed, because the pollinators can't get there. This also means that sometimes, for example, if you have a single flower, like the butterfly rose, which changes color and also has a very open flower form like that. That's also something where you will get many, many more rose hips if the pollinators are able to get to that rose. So if you have a collection of roses and you really would like more rose hips, go for a semi-double or a single flowered rose. And of course, the folks at Antique Rose Emporium have plenty of those to recommend to you. There are a couple of them that I'm very fond of, and I'm happy to say that they tend to be fond of them too. But the what they call pollinator friendly really does just mean an open rose so that you can see the stamens. It doesn't have to be completely single, but it needs to be open faced. Cole Settlement is one that I have seen before and liked, and they also tell you about Up for Anything, because although it is a semi double, it does have some area that is accessible to the pollinators. So that's pretty cool, pretty fun stuff. Let's see. I've never taken that Christmas cactus outside. I'm just not sure which fertilizer to use when I do. I prefer to see how the plant's growing. If it's doing well after it's repotted, I'm probably not going to do any fertilizer other than maybe a slow release in the container to get those leaves nice and bright and strong. Then when I want the plant to actually grow, in my case, that will probably be May or June, I will start using a soluble fertilizer on it, maybe once every couple of weeks. They don't need to be over-fertilized. But that's the process that you have to stop in the fall in order for the buds to set. So when you start fertilizing, pay attention to when you're doing that. And when you get to September, slow down again on it. That's all. Really, really, really fun plants. And easy, easy, easy to grow. Oh, good question. What are your recommendations for getting your zinnia soil ready? You don't have to do anything except make sure that it drains and that it's in the sun. So if you have a mud spot that you want to turn into a bed for zinnias, this will be a great time to go in, dig it up, and start adding some materials to it, such as soil conditioners, ground barks, your own leaf mold, some bagged compost and manure perhaps, but not too much. They don't need much fertilizer. But just to make a nice bed out of that, you can do that right now. If you have another area that perhaps is grassy and weedy, this would be the time that you want to get those under control, because they will fight with your zinnias, and you don't need that. But it's really a matter of soil prep depending on your situation. And if your soil is real wet, amend it and build a bed up a little bit so that they will be able to drain and still have plenty of space that they can grow in. And on the other hand, if you've got an area that you're going to clear for zinnias, make sure you go ahead and do that clearing now. One of the things that I have liked to do, particularly if there's grasses or something, maybe not lawn, but if there's stuff growing there, this works with lawns too, go ahead and cut it down as low as you can get it and then basically just scrape it off. Now, if it's turf, take about an inch underneath, because you want that. You can reuse that some other place in your garden. But if it's just weedy stuff and you're trying to get rid of it, scrape it right off the top. Get rid of that out of your area and then start amending your soil. I like that optimism. Let's think about zinnias already. That's great. Yes, yes, yes. Plant those fruit trees. Thank you for asking that question. I probably should have made a remark about that before, because it is time to prune them, but it is also time to plant them. And yes, apples, plums, peaches, this is figs too. It's wonderful time. What we're trying to do with all of this tree and shrub planting in the winter is to give them time to put on some good, healthy roots before we're asking them to send up some shoots and therefore some new leaves. So it's very, very important to do that. I think you'll be glad that you did. I know that there's a lot to talk about in the world of what we're doing to our shrubs, how we're pruning them, what we're pruning them with. I have had an argument with somebody about using electric head shears and what they're appropriate for and what they're not. This person actually has some really fancy ones, and they cut their ornamental grass with it, but it looked raggedy to me. So I said, well, I'm just going to, I would like for you to just take your hand operated, you know, hedge trimmers, turn them upside down so that the point is going down away from you and clean that area up. Well, once you do that, you see that you've actually got that mushroom shape that we're looking for in most of the ornamental grasses. So you can take that same technology and apply it to perhaps to the other shrubs that you're doing if you don't like the way your pruning has turned out. So it's always good to go back and take another look. I like that. Let's see. What can Swiss chard be planted in spring in zone 8? Oh, absolutely. Swiss chard, beets, all of that whole group of plants really does need to get in as quickly as you can in zone 8 because we don't know when it will get hot. So once you, if you've got a cloche for your container or for your little part of the garden where you're planting, you can go ahead and plant just as soon as the weather evens out, mid-February, say, and then if you have to cover them, you'll cover them. But you can get them growing and certainly get them underway. You can start Swiss chard in the house and transplant it out, but you would prefer to sow beets in place or carrots and that sort of stuff. Well, we grow turnips again. We grow mustard, you know, all of those things that you might think of as fall can also be grown in the springtime. Everybody just can't stand it. They're waiting on tomatoes, you know, and it's really not quite time. Not quite time. Let's see, pruning apples are really good. It's a good thing because you do have to prune them. What you're trying to do with apples is to create an open canopy with a lot of fruiting spurs. The spurs are the part of the apple that comes out on its, the branch comes out, and these are T's. We talk about this on muscadines. We talk about this on wisteria. You're looking for that part that goes straight up off of the branch, and that perpendicular or that T is where the flowers are going to be. So you want to cut that. It may be 5 or 6 inches long coming out there. You want to trim it back. But the other part of it is you always want to shape the canopy to get a nice round head on an apple. You're not trying to do that with a pear. With a pear, you're usually trying to go for a slightly conical shape because it's going to be a tall tree with many side branches. But apples tend to be more rounded if they're well produced and well cared for. So that's what I would suggest. First of all, figure out where your top is and make a prune there so then you know where you're working from, and then artistically come down and shape the canopy. But then go into the canopy, and on each of those branches where there is the T's, cut those T's back to 2 inches so you have a place for the flowers and fruit to happen. The other reason, of course, that we do the pruning in the winter is because the tree is as dormant as it's going to get. And this year, I think they're pretty dormant. I think they're sleeping. I have some beautiful leaves. They're not green. They're last fall's leaves that haven't quite fallen off of my blueberries. I thought they would finally fall off, and I'm hoping that they will because they've just been beautiful plants. But they need to get some rest before it's time. Let's see. Oh, good question. Should Christmas cactus be transplanted into a cactus blend or a regular potting soil? Depends on your regular potting soil. Doesn't have to be as sandy as you might find the cactus mixes to be, but it certainly needs some kind of drain element in it. I like perlite. I like sharp sand. Either one of those. Sometimes I will take a good potting mix that I've made for other plants and still put in a little bit extra perlite because I want that better drainage for things like Christmas cactus. Let's see. No, don't cut those back yet, Joe. That's my general rule at this point, is just wait and see. And in a few weeks, they'll either brighten back up or they won't, and we'll know then. But you can always do the scratch test with your thumbnail to see if there's green underneath those parts, but some of this is still alive, so I don't want you to mess with it too much until you get the opportunity to. Now, on the other hand, if it's going to get that cold again, cover it up this time or roll it into somewhere. Oh, but it has happened to all of us. I have to get out into the garden today and uncover some of my tender baby herbs and stuff that were out there. But I'm happy to tell you that my box around the dryer vent has kept the green onions green, so that's good news. They're planted in a box outside of the house. but the box itself is resting right underneath where the dryer vent is. So it does get to get a little bit of attention from some heat every here and there. Oh my goodness, this was a fast segment. Thanks, y'all. This has been a fun day. Yeah, Joe, I'm not going to cut that stuff off yet, Joe. Let's just wait and see what happens. I had to look at that again. Turnip greens, mustard greens, you name it. We're getting there. One more little bit of cold, maybe in February. We'll see. Stick around. We've got a lot to talk about coming up next.
Right back here to me. Thank God for good direction. Turnip greens.
Homeowners, Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
You know that nowadays more people are cutting the cord, ditching traditional cable and satellite television, and instead just streaming everything. With SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital's over-the-top advertising, you can get your business seen on streaming TV. SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital's highly trained and trusted team can show you how your ad dollars can go further to reach a more targeted audience. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get...
Never been to Big Mamu. It's getting to be chicken chasing time. Those of you who have been to Big Mamu, you know about that. It's a gumbo thing. Yes, they ride around in costume and gather up things for gumbo, and that's what that party's all about. I'm serious. I'm not making this up. I've been there. He's looking at me like, where has she been?
I want to go to a gumbo party. Our next guest has probably been to one.
I would imagine she has. Let me answer one quick question, then we're going to talk to Janet. What do I do with my poinsettia? Bubba in Starkville wants to know. The good news is that if it hasn't already dropped every leaf, it's doing fine. Be sure you get the wrapping off of it, water it a little bit, and then when it does begin to decline, you'll want to cut it back so you can start it growing again for next year. And if it has already started to decline, then give yourself the opportunity to cut it back and fertilize it. You're going to treat it like a good old house plant, and that's really the thing to do. Okay? Okay. Now, I'm happy to say that we get to talk about orchids because we have wooed her. We have invited Janet Ollier to come and talk with us today about the Gulf Coast Orchid Society's annual orchid show, the Goche Convention Center, which is, of course, in Goche, Mississippi, coming up on January 31st. Good morning, Janet. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. We really appreciate it.
Well, the folks that are looking in on supertalk.tv are now they're drooling because the orchids are so beautiful, and perhaps the only thing more beautiful than the orchids is you. So thank you very much for showing us some of yours as well. Tell me about this event. Tell me about the Gulf Coast Orchid Society and what y'all are up to.
Okay, so yes, we're having our show. It's our 45th annual. We have it every year. We have it at the Goche Convention Center, as you said. That's at 2012 Library Lane in Goche. Our hours are Friday, January 31st to Sunday, February 2nd, and the hours are 10 to 6 on Friday, 10 to 3:30 on Saturday. We have six different vendors. They're coming from all over the South.
Oh, fun.
Texas, Florida, We sell supplies. They sell orchids, and they're there to help you and to teach you how to grow them. We have all kinds of information that we give out, and all our members are going around helping people pick out orchids. And we just and then we have judges. We have a whole area where the judges come in and they judge orchids that different societies across the South have brought in. And so you'll see orchids there that are
love. How fun. Well, I do know a couple of people who exhibit at your show or have over the years, and they always talk about what a fun time it is because y'all are so nice and the event is so lovely. And of course, it's a beautiful part of the world to get to visit to. But, you know, it's shopping and it's looking. And if you're an orchid grower, it's judging. But y'all teach too, right?
Do what now?
Y'all teach.
Sorry.
Y'all teach too, right?
Yes. So, yes, we have information we give out, and we'll help people learn how to grow them, and that's what we do at our meeting.
I love the Groundhog Day special class. I think that's fun. By the way, y'all, when you see their flyer, you know somebody's got, I don't know, Canva or something really smart going on, because it is, in fact, the most adorable of the groundhogs you'll ever see, and he's surrounded by orchids. So it's lovely. It's really very cute. Very, very nice.
I hope y'all, yeah, we're going to have little groundhogs hiding around everywhere. We're going to have repotting classes as well.
Oh, fun. Now, see, that's something everybody wants to know about that. That's not an easy thing to explain to somebody. Some orchids, you and I know, are terrestrial. They grow kind of in soil. But other ones that are the epiphytes that hang from trees, they don't grow so well in soil. So y'all will give the scoop on that, right?
That is correct. Yes, ma'am. And we will talk to people. And like I said, we will be repotting. We're going to physically repot at 4:30 on Friday and Saturday.
That's so great, because if you see somebody do it, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Tell me.
And they sell supplies. We'll have people there who sell the potting media for orchids there as well.
You know, that's interesting, because someone just asked today, do I need to use cactus soil for my Christmas cactus? And of course, the answer is, well, probably not. But you do want to make something that is very, very well drained. And when it comes to growing really anything, but particularly when we're growing something like orchids, if you don't get them in the right kind of soil, they're just going to sit there and look at you. They're not going to grow. So that's a wonderful thing for y'all to demonstrate to people and frankly answer all their questions at the same time. Tell me something. I know it's probably not possible to know this, but just from the photographs, it looks like y'all must have a large membership to be able to conduct such an event as this. How big is the membership, and how often do y'all meet during the year?
Well, our membership has grown in the last couple of years, and yes, we do have a lot of people come to our meetings now. We have close to 40 come to the meetings each month.
Love that.
And we probably have 60 to 75 members that are on the books.
That is really,
such an
accomplishment.
New.
But that is such an accomplishment. Yeah. It's really hard to get people to, frankly, you know, get out of their telephones sometimes, get off their couch and go to a meeting of people with like minds. And this is someplace you're going to have fun, you're going to be inspired, you're going to learn something. And there's nothing better, I don't think, than having the opportunity to be surrounded by some beautiful plants, really from all across the South and other places too. But I know all of the Southern Orchid Societies kind of show up at this one. And so y'all have a lot of people. It's really wonderful.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am, and it is a great way. I mean, that's one thing that got me started in to going to the shows and the meetings, is this is a great way in the middle of the winter. We go, and here you see all these beautiful flowering things when everything else is dead everywhere else. It's just, you know, it
just
brightens your day.
Exactly, just brightens your spirits. And also, frankly, you don't have to have a big yard to grow orchids. You know, you can grow orchids anywhere that you live. There are quite a few species that are comfortable with the same temperatures you're comfortable with. So that's kind of a cool thing about them.
I have actually known people who bought orchids for their mother to stay in a nursing home, so that you know, and they were able to grow them throughout the year and rebloom them in their little apartment.
I love that. Yeah. And it is one of the things that will brighten any corner. I mean, let's face it. I have known a couple of people had very shady houses, but they had one space on their property that was had enough bright light for a greenhouse to grow some orchids in, and no matter when you went to their house during the year, one or another of the orchids was on the living room table because they would bloom at different times, and they would bring them in just because it was that one was in bloom today. We're going to look at it. You know, it's pretty, and that's really the thing about orchids. Yes. There's so many different kinds and different habits that they have that it's a wide range of beautiful plants.
Exactly. There are, no two collections are the same. There's over 28,000 species of orchids and 763 genera.
Wow.
So, each collection is different.
Isn't that something? Tell me what you grow. I can see, I'm looking at a picture, but I'm not exactly sure what I'm looking at when I see you. Tell me about the kinds of orchids you like.
I grow vandas. I think that's what you're looking at.
That's what it looks
vanda.
Like to me. But I'm not that smart.
Those grow. the pink one and the yellow ones are vandas.
Love
and
it.
Then I also grow cattleyas, which are the ones that are like the corsage orchid.
I was going to say, we call that corsage orchid, but I don't know that anybody even wears corsages anymore.
Yeah, remember back when you were little, your mom gave you a corsage for Mother's Day?
Oh, wait, cattleya. I still have the first corsage pressed that was given to me for a dance when I was in high school, and that's about 110 years ago. But it was orchids. It was small orchids, and I knew immediately how much he thought of me because it was not, you know, well, I don't want to put down any flowers, but it was not the simplest of the flowers. It was the orchids, and that still meant a lot to me. What fun. I love that y'all are going to give demonstrations. I love that there are people there that are exhibitors that will show you what kind of product you need to grow the kind of orchid that you want to grow. But I also really encourage people to just go and walk the show. I mean, there's such beautiful flowers, and you will literally go away with ideas for colors that you hadn't thought about, and maybe even in flowers, you know, you'll want to put them on your wall, or you'll want to decide to change your clothing, or suddenly you'll decide you're going to become an orchid grower. But there's something here for everybody.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, from, like I said, the ladies in the nursing homes to the younger growers who like to grow the real funky ones with the crazy smells. And, I mean, there's
some odd orchids out there. There definitely are. And I love seeing, we always feel like we who are of a certain age always hope that our knowledge will be continued and put into the next generation. And obviously you're nowhere near my age, but you're already passing on good information too. So I think that's delightful. Y'all have such a good active group. I hope that folks will get themselves to Goche to the Gulf Coast Orchid Society. And if they don't, they can get in touch with y'all how so that they can, y'all have a Facebook page, right? So if somebody just wants to find out about your meetings.
Yes, ma'am. We have a Facebook page. Our meetings are at the VFW in Gulfport at 15206 Vito Road at 2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. It's a great way to spend a Sunday afternoon. Our meeting in February is moved to February 16th because of the show. But,
so y'all jump right back in, get started for the next year. That's wonderful.
Yes, we do.
I love that.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell me a little bit about Goche. Tell me about a little bit about Goche. Are there concessions, and is there what are people going to find when they get to the convention center?
Well, it's on the campus of the college. Mm-hmm. It's near the campus, and so it's right next to the library. There are food places nearby. There's not a lot of places to eat, but you'll find
something. I was going to say, Ocean Springs is real close, and there's plenty of things there. But somebody could go for the day and have a wonderful time, you know, and really learn something about orchids, get to meet y'all. I wish that it was going to be me, but it won't be me this year. But I might get there next year. It's a fun event.
Well, I hope so. I'd love to meet you as well.
I came to y'all's event once, and I really was impressed. There was so much to see and so many people doing so many cool things. Thank you, Janet, for being with us today. I know that your whole organization is going to grab this and tell you how wonderful you are, and if you're not careful, they'll elect you president. So be real careful. Do we have to go to a lifetime position? Because you're good talking about it as well as everything else. Now, I can't let you go without tipping my hat to you because I know that you're a postal worker. And, you know,
y'all are
the stalwarts of my world, and not only because it always looked to me like if I could just get a letter from someplace else, you know, it was a little bit different than my little hometown that I was in. But it's also true that y'all keep everything moving and keep everything going. I'm not going to tell everybody how long you worked this week, but she didn't get home much this week in all that weather. She was working.
Yeah.
And that's really the thing about it. When you meet someone who is a public servant like you are, we have to tip our hat. We have to say thank you. And we have to show the respect that you certainly deserve. Thank you for being there. Thank you for doing that. And thank you for having a hobby that is this grand and this wonderful on top of everything else that your life has in it. Janet Olie, I appreciate you, president of the Gulf Coast Orchid Society. President for life, by the way, y'all. This is going to be this is going to be a trend. Thank you so much for
being with me
today. And anything else you want to tell our folks about coming to see you? Do they need to know anything else?
I can't think of anything else. Just come and have a wonderful weekend and, you know, spend a few hours with us and you'll learn a lot.
I love it. Well, y'all be sure you get to supertalk.tv or see my show in the podcast form after we're done here because you don't want to miss these orchids. These are some beautiful, beautiful flowers. And I look forward to talking to you again, Janet. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye now. You know, there are so many crazy things going on in this world. We're going to jump from bliss to mess. Greg wants to know, do voles ever hibernate? I don't think so. I think they get quiet for a minute, maybe when they're in their nest. But no, they're if the damage is coming up right underneath the level of the mulch and right under on the top part of your lawn, for example, they'll get under it, but they can't go any farther than is easy. So that's why oftentimes you'll see a little bit in the lawn, but then you'll see most of that damage up in whatever is the nearest flower bed with some mulch in it because that's easier for them. They will eat plant roots. They are a big love hostas, so you have to keep them out of your hosta beds. But no, I don't think voles ever quite hibernate. Oh my goodness. We're going to step away. We will be back. We got a little bit more to do this morning. Thank you all for being here. Stick around.
The dawn and home long after the sun sets. We pass this farm work ethic on to our children too. They have their chores just like yours, but we also raise animals. Taking care of these animals helps them understand just how important what we do on this farm is for their future and Mississippi's.
Another way Mississippi farmers grow what's important to your life, the farm families of Mississippi.
Who couldn't use stacks of cash about now? As in the $5 stacks of cash scratch-off game from the Mississippi Lottery with a top prize of $100,000. If a $2 ticket is more your style, try Wonderbucks with a $20,000 top prize. Want something moving? Match three like prize amounts in the $1 moolah game and you could be moving up to $5,000 into your piggy bank. Play the new January games from the Mississippi Lottery and have fun, y'all.
Gambling problem?
We've sent that rib...
Some y'all never been down south too much. Some y'all never been down south too much. I'm going to tell you a little story so you'll understand what I'm talking about. Down there we have a plant that grows out in the woods in the fields, and it looks something like a turnip green. Everybody calls it poke salad. Now that's poke salad. Lord have mercy. Used to know a girl lived down there. She'd go out in the evenings and pick a mess of it, carry it home and cook it for supper, because that's about all they had to eat.
Goodness, I'm sorry gracious. I had to do that. Gave me the freedom.
I did.
You give freedom, like you pay like the price.
We could be here. If we had another hour, we could talk about poke salad.
Oh, yeah.
What it is and what it isn't things.
We need to dig into that one day.
Well, I can tell you that if you're a sophomore at LSU and you're a very young girl, it's not exactly the same as hunting for. It's one of those things that you might want to go out and learn about before you get there. Let's put it that way. And anywhere that it grows, because it is a very, very wide ranging plant. No doubt about that. Oh, good question. If the voles, what else can you do about the voles? And my answer was that I found if I have outdoor cats, the voles go someplace else. And the same thing is, according to an aunt of mine, is true for little feist dogs, which I understand are rat terriers. That's the whole point. Those of you who keep up with our brilliant friend Gary Bachman on the real Gary Bachman on social media, you will know that he has been combating the mice that want to come in for the winter to his house on the coast. Yeah, that might be the answer there, too. Apparently, his dog is not too much help. But anyway, yes, indeed. Gainesville, Tennessee, and over in Alabama, there are, in fact, poke salad festivals in different places. That is true. Ooh, those Tabasco peppers are beautiful. Yours are prettier than mine, by the way. Thank you, Richard. Theirs are gorgeous. Gorgeous, gorgeous. That's from Columbus, by the way. And the T-shirt's cute, too. But the peppers are even prettier. That's great. To tell you this, we are in the midst of getting a new round of T-shirts done. These will be different from Super Talk T-shirts. That's for events. That's for here. But these are going to be Garden Mama T-shirts that, yes, you will have to pay for. These will not be free, but they'll still be very reasonable. However, we're taking some of my sayings and some of my points of view and some of the holidays and taking my logo and turning it into a celebration of the whole year. And I think you're going to like them. So I'm happy to say that for all of those of y'all who've been looking for more T-shirts, I'm glad that most of you have said that you'd be more than happy to pay for one, because it is going to cost you some money. These are not free. But they're going to be around. If I'm really lucky, there's going to be one rolling out for Valentine's and then another one for Mardi Gras. So we shall see what we shall see. But keep with me. Stick with me. I love the idea of y'all wearing Garden Mama.
We need to do one with like Al Capone shooting plants or something on Valentine's.
That would get a lot of attention.
Just because, you know, it's a play on everything.
I have seen a really very cool drawing, but I have not turned it into a T-shirt. The notion that you don't bring a whip to a gunfight, kind of stuff. There's that with mosquitoes and people and their large guns shooting the mosquitoes. So there could be something in there, because we do like our humor.
In Gainesville, Tennessee, and Arab, Alabama.
How about that?
That's awesome. Yeah, thanks for sharing.
How about that? Mm-hmm. We need a tour, y'all.
Oh, definitely.
See, we need a biscuit festival and a Mayhaw Jelly Festival, and we need a tour of the poke salad festivals.
Yeah.
Does anybody want to go to the alligator festival?
I would.
Yeah. It's fun. It's a good.
Do they like cook alligator too?
Yeah. Almost all the alligator that I've ever eaten was at a couple of those festivals, because they cook it 17 different ways. You know, everybody's got their own thing, and it's really fun. I can't say that. You know, I like the music every bit as well as I like the food. So there's that.
Now,
was,
do you, is it mostly tail that you're eating?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's plenty of that.
I've never really asked.
There were kebabs. There were sauce pecan. There was all kinds.
I'd be surprised. People that know how to cook
rice
gar
dishes
and buffalo and carp, they're delicious when cooked correctly, or, you know, if you know what you're doing. But they're not fish that you normally would think about eating, kind of like an alligator.
There's definitely ways that people who have, as they say, that's what we have here to eat. That's how we figure that out. That's absolutely the truth. From song sparrows in Portland, Oregon, to a bunch of birds on the West Coast all over the place, they have been studying coping with urban life at the University of California, Davis, on behalf of the birds. We know that, for example, in Portland, Oregon, the birds sing louder than they do in the woods nearby. We've had those studies here before. Cockatoos in Australia can open trash cans. You know, there's a lot of things that our bird and other friends can do. But we don't really think about the ones that have been sort of dangerous to us. There's a misconception in San Francisco, for example, that coyotes are there because they're starving in their natural habitat and that therefore you should feed them. That's really not true. You moved into their natural habitat, which is the San Francisco Peninsula. So when they come back, and they're not ill-fed. But what we have learned is that they eat based on what block they're on. In other words, all of the coyotes that frequent the areas where there's a whole bunch of restaurants tend to live on mice and rats. The ones that don't tend to go into your garbage can. I mean, there's just very clear patterns. Again, because we can put the little tags on creatures and follow them around, we end up understanding a great deal more about their behavior and also about what we should and should not do for them. For example, they were taken out in the early 1900s, but they have been brought back. I love that word, extirpated, but they have been brought back since the 2000s, and now they share space with 850 plus thousand people on only 47 square miles. That's pretty dense. Second most densely populated major city in the United States, with water on three sides. That is the San Francisco Peninsula. So, for example, it does not differentiate when they look at what remains, so to speak, what they leave behind. There might be chicken in it. Well, that might be fried chicken out of a can. It might be somebody's backyard chicken. It might be chicken that was found in pet food that somebody fed them. So they're having to sort out a whole lot of other things. That's been another of the reasons that they're telling you they got plenty to eat. You don't really need to feed them. But for example, in fancier neighborhoods, Telegraph Hill and Coit Tower, or even Bernal Hill, which is another place that's lovely, they had more human-sourced food than their coyote neighbors with the more green space around them, say in Golden Gate Park, where they could hunt. Kind of interesting, if you think about it, how they have adapted and how they have people. They really did think that they had gotten rid of them, quote unquote. Well, you don't get rid of things. You may change their habitat. You may have a different attitude about them, but they're not hungry, and you're not advised to feed them. So if you got coyotes near your house, you probably know that too, because we do have them here. One more note about the orchid show. I want to make sure y'all know that it is on January 31st and February 1st and 2nd. But the days you want to go really are that weekend, because that's when everything will be on display and things will be for sale and whatnot. And you can see how the judging came out, and you can find out what all everybody learned. An orchid in a deep forest sends out its fragrance even though nobody's around to appreciate it. Confucius said that. I agree with it. Dance like nobody's watching. We'll see you next week.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing The Garden Mama Show.
All of us at the Mississippi Propane Gas Association are committed to providing you with the best possible services and affordable values. We operate in a way that assures a safe, reliable, and economical fuel source. Our trained personnel constantly monitor the conditions of our gas systems to assure reliability and safety. Any repairs or modifications to a propane gas system must be performed by the qualified technicians of your propane provider as required by state and federal regulations.
Energy for everyone. Propane. Visit mspropane.com.
You know that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. Are customers able to find you online? With the power of SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital, you can reach potential customers and get more referral and repeat business. SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital's highly trained and trusted staff is ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get started today.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.